huge depopulation there. And then there was this sort of assumption that small towns were homophobic, so people sort of rushed to the big city. So this is an event that's primarily focused on getting people to come home to small towns, to the small town that you're from, and feel comfortable there. Mm-hmm. So it's this nice little themed pride. And all the marketing is specifically targeting lesbians. I think they know that lesbians love the countryside a little bit more than gay men
do. This is true. Any opportunity to chop some wood?
Mm-hmm. A little bit of a stereotype. Gay men love camping, so long as they have their inflatable mattress and their generator so they can, you know, get their electric kettle to work, which is not really camping at that point in time. But they love doing it for 2 days and then leaving. Which is a very different beast from living in the countryside, where you have to drive 2 hours because you forgot to get milk. So it's a cute little event. There's not much to say about it other than it happened. That's the name. That's where it's happening. It looks really positive. There is this push in a lot of small town prides to make people realize they don't have to move to Toronto to have a good life.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Don't get me wrong, there are many reasons why you may want to move to Toronto. The traffic is not one of them. Road closures, also not one of them. There's also maybe a list as long to dissuade you. But the point is, I think you're absolutely right. It's about finding that pride and that sense of community where you are. Mm-hmm. You know, and really, that's the key piece. You know, it's interesting to think about human migration patterns around Pride festivals, because, you know, I was talking to my brother recently, who is
did you mean to make a sound like literal butterflies?
Did I?
Yeah, human migration patterns, like we go from Mexico up to Southern Ontario and back home again in the summer.
This is true. Like what, a flock of seagulls. Not seagulls, they don't really migrate. A flock of Canadian geese. Every summer we migrate to the Mecca of Church Street and then flutter away again. I bring it up because, you know, I was talking to my brother, who has a different politics from myself and others, mm-hmm. recently. And there's this sense of being inundated with pride and gayness, and then just like, oh, I don't want it shoved down my throat.
Oh, there's LGBT people who also complain about that.
This is true.
Sometimes he's not alone on that.
We were watching the 24-hour news channel on TV, and I blame the news channels, because they just repeat. After about 25 minutes, you're getting the same story again.
Yeah.
You know, if you're sat there for a couple of hours, you're like, this is the third time I've seen this local drag queen talk about doing drag stuff. Like, I get it. Thank you. Move on.
You're cool. What's the weather?
Yeah, yeah. But that, it's more about the repetition of news. Where was I going with this? But yeah, no, the reason why I bring it up is I think that approach of making the space that you are in more welcoming and inviting.
Yeah.
Small-town communities struggle to retain folks who are younger. You know, a lot of our communities across Canada are aging disproportionately to the cities. You know, younger folks aren't going there, and they're not staying there as much. And I think a part of that is the perception that these small towns, these rural communities, are predominantly nearly always conservative in terms of like federal elections and things. Mm-hmm. And that perception of, oh, maybe I'm not welcome there. You know, maybe I'm not, this isn't where I can be at home. This is not where I can walk with my husband and our 3-year-old child without being yelled groomer at through a truck window. You know,
I am sure that more people in the countryside would vote Liberal if the Liberals talked about farming a little bit more. Mm-hmm. Like, the Conservative Party locked that down.
I'm not as convinced, but
but anyway, there actually is a demographic shift. Surely you've heard of this, because no one can afford to live in Toronto, even millionaires. There's been this shift for young people to move out to places like Guelph and Barrie and Brantford, because they can actually afford to live there. So there is that sort of reversing of the tides, where London and Paris, Ontario had this, I don't want to say explosion, but they had a small swelling of younger folks because they wanted to actually start families and they couldn't afford to live in Toronto. Mm-hmm. And now that remote work is a thing. So I don't know, but it's still going to places that have somewhere between 1 and 500,000 people. Like, we're not talking about small towns. We're talking about, what do you call B tier cities? I guess you could call them. I don't want to say something that sounds insulting, but you know, smaller cities, but not metropolitan cities. We'll just call them cities.
There is a by-election I want to see in Rockland, in Ontario, sort of outside of Ottawa. And in the debates there, they were talking about the fact that, I think it's a provincial by-election, the fact that town is projected just on homes that have been approved to be built to more than double in the population in the next 10 years. Ooh. You know, how do you maintain a community culture like that? How do you, with that much, how do you create a sense of permanence and home with that much transition in people?
The people who live there are going to feel kind of displaced or at least diluted. First thing that came to my mind was actually, how are you going to maintain your sewage system when it doubles in size?
You always think about the sewage systems.
I'm always thinking about infrastructure, man. I mean, earlier we were talking about aquaculture and drainage in Dutch farmers. But definitely that culture is there. But actually, speaking of infrastructure, I mean, that also is things like local community centers, bars, sports clubs, that kind of thing. They're all going to double in size. And they're going to have to adapt.
Community doctors, having a local doctor there, you know, it all ties in. And I think that it's important for these smaller communities to say, look, you know, we want everyone to feel welcome in this space. And the reality is that very often queer folks have double incomes and no kids, you know, so they do well for the tax base, you know, and it goes well like that. And we both know
local small businesses.
We're obsessed with local small businesses. And we all know many a queer person who would vote conservative in a heartbeat. You know what I mean? Like, it's not necessarily as a people that we are a single voting bloc in favor of any particular party. So I don't know. I think small town prides are great. I'm glad to see them increasing. But I also think it says a lot about Canadian culture and a Canadian sense of belonging and home and carving out and not just carving out space for everyone to feel welcome, but also to just express that. Most Canadians, the vast majority of Canadians, are pleasant and lovely.
Yes.
And as an immigrant, and I mean, they're more than fine. Most Canadians are lovely. And I'll go on record saying that. Yeah.
So here's a nice little segue, actually coming off what you said about communities trying to feel more welcoming. There is a small controversy coming out of our favorite medium-sized city in Canada.
Oh, is it Halifax?
Hamilton, Ontario.
Hamilton. We do like Hamilton.
Yeah.
Very quickly on Halifax, just very, very, very quickly. They have, with 8 days to go, confirmed the parade route. So everyone in Halifax is really on the edge of their seat being like, will they, won't they, will they, won't they? They've with 8 days to go, confirmed the route. And I was wondering, I was like, wow, that's not very great communication from this Pride organization. So I looked up Toronto Pride. In the whole of this last year, they issued 2 press statements. That was it. Both of them were related to lines, or queues, if you're British, to get in and out of the venues. That was the only statements they made. So Pride's not being communicative is not just a Halifax problem. Sorry, yes, tell me more about Hamilton.
Yes, so the all of the police community outreach committees...
Can we just give the context here for why this committee in Hamilton is important?
Sure. Yeah. Oh, I thought you said you were going to do it. Okay.
No, I said, can we? I thought you would just like...
Oh, yeah. Like, I thought you said, I'm going to do it. Okay, sorry.
Why a police community thing in Hamilton is relevant. Yeah.
Well, some of these are actually mandated. So there is an outreach committee between police and local advocates for people with disabilities, for example, because putting handcuffs on somebody with mobility issues. There's all sorts of stuff there that there's training and then there's outreach and all that kind of thing. Historically, there has been a real attempt at fostering a better relationship between the LGBT community and the police in various communities across Canada because of that history of open homophobia, especially with the bathhouse raids. Treatment of activists in the 80s and 90s for basic human rights, for legal rights. What's actually happening currently in Hamilton is most of the committees that are not under provincial regulation, because some of them are required by law, are under review. And it's not that they're going to discontinue them. It's that they're going to restructure them. And one of the problems that they have is currently the current structure is community organizations send representatives to the committee, and then they just talk about the issues of the day and they resolve them. They try to find solutions and whatnot. But what's happening is people in Hamilton are complaining about community gatekeeping, that these organizations are speaking on behalf of people who don't feel represented by those organizations. Now, it's a plurality issue. You're going to have one you're going to have one organization that represents your thoughts and beliefs and wants and needs perfectly. You're going to have another one that basically opposes them because something to do with their mandate. They're just into certain goals that are that don't necessarily benefit you. Sometimes you'll have an organization that on paper represents you perfectly, but the person that they send to represent them is the worst member of the organization, and they're just bad. Sometimes you get somebody who's excellent from a bad organization. It's a crapshoot. So what Hamilton is thinking about doing is skipping over this and going to direct to community events. Now, if you've ever seen Parks and Recreation, the TV show written and starred by Amy Poehler, it may end up looking like that, of just you're in a school gymnasium and it's absolute bedlam and people are asking questions that do not make sense and they have to sit there and answer them professionally. Or it could actually turn out to be a positive experience where community members who do not feel heard do feel heard by the police instead of having to pass through these gatekeepers. Now, the problem is both of those concerns are being openly aired in the local media. Hamilton has a very strong local media, which is why we report on them all the time, because they actually have people reporting on stuff. It's being discussed in the committee meetings themselves. It's being discussed in the community, all the various local community groups. You can go to their websites. A lot of them have something to say about this shift. Some of them are for it. Some of them are against it. It's absolute chaos. Nobody can agree on whether or not this is even a good thing. You have a lot of people saying, I agree with the principle, but I don't trust them to execute it properly, which I am willing to bet that's probably your attitude. I see what you're trying to do. I don't trust you to do it well.
Yeah, I mean, the listeners obviously can't see this, but the sheer amount of skepticism on my face is beyond palpable. It is, yeah, I don't know, because we look at other models, right? We look at, in 1991, the Ottawa Police Service rolled out their liaison committee, built much the same way as this bridge. Now, to give
and
people,
it was the first in Canada, so they kind of set the model.
So to give folks an example that might be quite good here, for example, there was, I remember because I was working there at the time, there was an increase in public indecency, let's say, at one of the major malls in the Washams there. And they said, we're going to crack down on it, get the word out, this is not acceptable. I think it was described as this is pre-pan, whatever. So, but it was more about getting the word out to the community, and we were able to then, the community organizations were able to clarify, look, given where this mall is, the demographic there is predominantly government workers. You know, if you go coming in with your badge first, there's going to be a significant reaction. So it's about that educational, that two-way communication. The Ottawa Police also, I'm doing air quotes here, reviewed their approach to the community, and they just mothballed it. And yeah, there is now no effective communication between the LGBT community and the Ottawa Police. And I think we saw that come up at the recent Pride events. Like things, that communication breakdown is not great. In Toronto, they went a different approach where they have the LGBT liaison officer. I think they may even have two of them now. But there is such a breakdown of trust between the LGBT community in Toronto and TPS as a service that having your token go-to officer is really insufficient. You know, it's like, wow, you are lovely, but every other, your systems of control, the officers in charge, the department heads, you know, the fact that TPS is structurally not where it needs to be. That also hasn't effectively worked, you know. So where do we find something that does work? There hasn't really been a model that makes sense. I don't know if allowing every Tom, Dick, and Harry to walk into an assembly room and air the laundry is the best approach. But these other approaches taken elsewhere, also not that great. So I don't know.
An issue with gatekeeping in the community, though.
Yeah, but there's also an issue of the police almost not, I'm not going to say pretending to listen, but going through the motions of consulting and and engaging the community, and then it resulting in absolutely nothing happening.
Yeah.
You know, the fact that the community for months and months and months, if not a year or two, was telling TPS, Toronto Police Service, there is a serial killer. And they're like, yes, yes, great, wonderful. We're going to look for a cannibal out of the Netherlands, you know, and just paid zero attention. Not being hyperbolic here, the judge's report into the TPS handling of Bruce MacArthur's serial killings really tore them to shreds for that exact same reason, that their communication with the community failed epically. And I don't know, I wouldn't want to see Hamilton going the same way.
The committee structure, at least on paper, has an accountability structure there. That you agree to do this thing, and everyone in the room is a representative of an organization that can hold that against you later on if you fail to meet that, or at least fail to try. At least try, buddy. At least try. And if you scrap the committee structure, you might lose that accountability, even if you're gaining more voices. It's a balancing act. I do not envy them, because I think reviewing this kind of thing, it should be done. Even if things are going well, you should review these things. You could always do better.
I wanted to share a success here, because I think that there are many moments of success in how this communication worked. Sticking to the Bruce MacArthur piece, when the news broke of him being a serial killer in the Toronto area, the organizations in Ottawa were like, wow, you know, we're hearing through the grapevine that this guy came and did some gardens up in Ottawa. You know, what are the chances of cold cases and missing people in this area? And it was the ability to interact directly with the right department, the right people, asking the right questions to the right, if anyone's worked with bureaucrats, the right questions to the right people is really the magic formula,
and phrased correctly.
Exactly. And then within about 2 weeks, they did a search, they did of the national database that TPS refused to participate in, and they reported back saying that, we looked into it, we reviewed all our cold cases for this kind of criteria, and can confidently say that no, he didn't kill anybody in the area. So communication works really well when there is trust and openness in both directions.
Yep.
So I think that it is incredibly valuable.
It's good stuff. Well, I mean, when done well.
When done well. I get certainly a little bit worked up with police community liaison discussions. Let's jump to something a little bit more lighthearted. This is Safe by Cupid's Heart. And then when we get back, I think we have a quick rundown of some international news. And I don't know if you have anything else on your list there, Seb?
Nothing major.
All right, cool. We'll be back just after this. This is Safe by Cupid's Heart.
Something to know. looking down at one of those paintings. Something I could not desist, but it delays and it waits. And it sits there, and it's welcome at the dinner table, please. All these arms, they are helpless, holding words I can't relay. It ain't around, paint you one of those.
Welcome back to Can Queer, home of Canada's queer media. We are we have about 5-10 minutes, but I wanted to share the story out of Hungary. Mm-hmm. And it was Budapest Pride this past weekend. And just very quickly recap, Hungary has a law in place where you can't promote homosexuality to anyone under the age of 18. They recently fined a bookstore for the Heartstopper book series, which is an adorable Netflix series. I recommend it. And such a pleasant book to read. It's, it's not a book, it's a graphic novel. It takes you like all of 5 minutes to get through it. But I wanted to bring it up because the Canadian Embassy in Hungary, along with about 37 others, have signed on to a statement that's been put out by the U.S. Embassy. Mm-hmm. A joint statement on the occasion of the 28th Budapest Pride Festival. I'll quickly read it here. The Canadians have signed on to this. And I quote, "On the occasion of the 28th Budapest Pride Festival, we, the undersigned embassies and cultural institutions, express our full support for members of the lesbian, gay, bisexual, transgender, queer, intersex, LGBTQI+, community in Hungary and their rights to equality, non-discrimination, freedom of expression, and peaceful assembly, and freedom from violence. Respect for the rule of law and universal human rights are the foundations upon which democratic states are built." They go on to say, "We reject and condemn all acts of violence, hate speech, harassment, stigmatization, discrimination, communicating against individuals and communities." I'm not going to read the whole thing. It is a heck of a statement. But essentially, it is, they obviously are celebrating Pride. It is a bit of a slap on the wrist for the Hungarian government under Viktor Orban. They have also been taken to court in the EU for how this law may not comply with European law. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I think it's really interesting. The ambassador for the US in Hungary, who is openly gay, was hosting a picnic open to families at the embassy, which is obviously U.S. territory, mm-hmm. And really sort of celebrating pride and openness, very much in almost defiance of Viktor Orban's Hungarian government and the laws that are in place. I just thought it was an interesting story, given that the Canadian embassy has also signed on to this particular letter. Mm-hmm. Did you see any other news that you wish to impart with our listeners?
I saw a few smaller ones. They passed a law at the... Actually, no, I think this is old. No, it's not old. It has been... No, this is old. I will skip this. There is a new survey on international travel for same-sex couples on honeymoons. And what they actually found was that a very large number of them 44% of them prioritize overall destination experience over local attitudes, and a lot of people are going to places like Dubai, South Africa, places in Eastern Africa, despite local laws, because they just want to have a good time in a interesting location. Now, what they did find is that everyone doing this is also selecting private villas. They're not going to hotels. They're going to private villas where they're not going to be spotted by neighbors. But they are finding it kind of interesting that this is a trend in and among LGBT people. But they are still finding, actually, the top destinations are places like Canada, Iceland, Norway, England, France, like a lot of the sort of places that do actually have human rights, they do top the list, but they're actually just finding a lot more people are going to places like Indonesia and Malaysia than you might suspect.
That is quite surprising. You know, the pink dollar, pink tourism, i.e. the gay community, mm-hmm. you know, there is definitely folks out there trying to recruit them and advertise to, mm-hmm. to queer folks. Like I said earlier in the show, typically double income, no kids, mm-hmm. Which means that they're able to maybe spend on more vacations, etc. That's disappointing. I am disappointed in the gays for going to countries that are actively persecuting their own community.
But if you're, for example, someone of Indonesian descent living in Canada,
that's one thing. But going to the UAE for the beaches when their approach to LGBT rights is not maybe where it needs to be, I personally would rather spend my money on a country where I don't have to feel guilty about how they're working with their own communities. But
I would rather honeymoon in a place that never sees the sun and where there's always ice on the ground. I'm definitely a cold weather guy.
Other than Siberia, Nunavut, I think.
Scotland, actually, because the fog there keeps the sun from touching you.
That's true.
That's why they're all ghostly gray, white up there.
Pallid. Yeah. All right, we have run out of time with our wonderful review of Scottish weather. This we are playing out with Sleepy Northern Town by the Vanstones. I've been Luke Smith.
And I've been Sebastian. And thank you for listening.
In a sleepy northern town, for a train to arrive, standing there barefoot longer than I knew I should. Can my patience survive? They say the good things come to those who wait, but if that train's gonna stop here, it's coming off. The desperate spring. In a sleepy northern town.